everybody. What's going on? Welcome back to the Midnight Terrors podcast. Merry Christmas. Happy holidays. Here's a little extra episode for you. And happy to be here. My name is Kevin, and I'm here with my co-host, Roy R. Jacob Honeybrook. What's up, dude?
What's going on, man? You get all that Christmas shopping done yet?
Finishing it up on the 24th.
Late to the party, but never late to the game.
Yep, exactly. I know it's the 23rd when we're recording this, but Merry Christmas, brother.
Hey, Merry Christmas to you too, man. I probably won't see you until then, after.
Yeah, you're gearing up to go. Where are you going? You're going to Pennsylvania?
Back to PA, getting the hell out of Ohio, which anywhere besides here is my dream vacation.
Is that an improvement in terms of the cold, or are you going straight into more cold?
Oh no, it's going to be more cold. I actually think where I'm at in PA is probably colder than Ohio.
Oh God, I can't do it, man. I'm over here in South Carolina and it's like 36 and I'm not hanging well. It's
Lucky. I remember sometimes back in PA, boy, this is enthralling talk. Weather. I remember sometimes back in PA, I would get up to go to the gym at 3 or 4 before I had to go into work. There were days like my car thermometer would be in the negatives. I'm just like, what am I doing with my life?
That's where you and I are with this podcast, is that it's like water cooler talk at work.
Yeah, so Janet over an accountant. God, blow my brains out now.
Yeah, well, let's get off of that. Merry
How'd you
Christmas,
catch the
everybody.
game, Paul? Anyway.
But Merry Christmas, everybody. Again, here's an extra episode for you. We mentioned this on the Silent Night, Deadly Night episode that there would be another one, which I think will probably come out on the same day, but I'm not sure yet, because I'm still editing that one. But
My
here's
bad.
no, it's all good. But here's another episode for you, and we're going into a movie that might be one of our more horror adjacent movie picks, as opposed to straight up horror, because we're talking about Scrooged from 1988. Is that right?
Yes, sir.
19
88s.
1988 19 1998 1988's Scrooged, starring Bill Murray. This Roy, I forget how this one came about. Did you suggest this one first?
I think I had brought it up just talking about Christmas and horror, and then you kind of ran with it.
Okay. Yeah,
But
because
I think it's funny you say horror adjacent, because I liken this to something like Idle Hands, where it's more of a dark comedy horror movie than it is anything else. I see a lot of horror in this, and especially on this watch.
you know what I upon rewatching this for this discussion, you know what I like in this movie a lot too is Death Becomes Her.
Yeah, that's a good point with all the different commentary on everything. It did remind me of that at some parts for sure. I did think of that movie.
Yeah, commentary, the dark humor, the reimagining of tales. Yeah, I think those would be a great double feature together as Scrooged and Death Becomes Her. But yeah, we were just talking about Scrooged off air. Both said we really liked this movie a lot and thought that there would be some good horror stuff to dive into. And upon rewatch, there is a lot.
Yeah, there really is. I'm not sure because the comedy is definitely there, but some of the scenes, for example, Bill Murray, Frank, his old boss when he comes back and he's all dusty and ghosty and his skeleton sticking out. That is a freaky scene, man. That creeped me out as a kid, and even watching it now, I'm like, this is better than some horror movies I've seen.
Well, that leads me to the classic question of when did you first see Scrooged? Because I am very recent with this movie.
Oh man.
My favorite podcast, Horror Movie Night, did an episode on this in 2019 for Christmas, and I had never even heard of it.
What?
Never been on my radar. And I was so intrigued by the movie that like their discussion on it that I was like, oh, I got to check this out. So I think like a year later in 2020, Mama Midnight and I watched this just on a whim, and it was so good. We immediately were obsessed with this movie and cracking up. And yeah, it's a great movie. So you saw this when you were young, though?
Yeah, for sure. Mama Midnight never saw it.
No.
Wow. I figured she might have since she was around back then. Not to say she's old, she doesn't look a day over 25. But yeah, I saw this one. I was very little. I think my dad had recorded it off HBO and had one of those bootleg VHS tapes of it. So this was right up his alley as far as the humor and the dark shit was concerned. We'd always either watch comedies or horror movies with him, sometimes war movies, but mainly the comedies and horrors. Comedies we shouldn't have been watching, horror movies we were way too young for. So it was always fun to see stuff with him. Anyway, after that run around, I did see it when I was really little, and man, again, it always scared me. The ghost of his old boss, the taxi driver, which is still weird, and I can't really put my finger on why. The ghost of Christmas Present and how ghostly she looks, like just everything about this movie. I would watch it as a kid and I would have fun with it, but so much of it was like, what the fuck am I seeing? And it really just stuck with me through the years. And I put this on every now and then, every couple of years at Christmas, I'll throw on Scrooged.
Well, hell yeah. And a quick plot synopsis of what Scrooged is about. As as implicated in the or implied in the title, it is a retelling of A Christmas Carol, the Charles Dickens story. They modernize it to the 80s when this came out, and Bill Murray plays Frank Cross, who's a television executive. And he is a mean son of a bitch. He's
Comically evil.
yeah, and he goes through the Christmas Carol story, which is actually kind of cool. There's a cool parallel with that that I don't know if I picked up on when I first watched this, but I'm sure we'll talk about him going through the story in the movie. And yeah, so it's a Christmas Carol, but it's a more modernized up to the 80s version. So Roy, I'm very interested to see what you came up with for production notes on this one, and I wonder if any of it has to do with the director. So what you got?
Before we get into that, I have a two-part question for you.
Okay.
Have you ever read A Christmas Carol, or are you familiar with it? Like, have you seen any movies based on it?
Oh yeah. I don't know what version it was, but when I was in school, they used to play A Christmas Carol, like one of the live action ones, like constantly every Christmas. So I watched that. I watched The Muppets Christmas Carol a
Hell
lot.
yeah.
One of my favorites there. I saw in theaters the Jim Carrey what's the term I'm looking for? Not stop motion, but like motion capture.
Oh, yeah, I forgot about that one.
I saw that version. And I did actually in 2020, I bought a copy of A Christmas Carol, and read it. And this is a cool story. So the year that I watched Scrooged, and again, I kind of attribute it back to horror movie night, listening to the episode and getting into the Christmas spirit that way. So 2020, I went out and I bought a copy of A Christmas Carol, which had like golden pages on it that I still have somewhere. And I was like, oh, I want to read it, for Christmas. And I had started it, and then Christmas morning rolls around and I woke up at like 6 a.m., being like a young kid again, and
Yippee!
was so jazzed for Christmas, but obviously my plans weren't until later. So I woke up and still had a bunch left to read of A Christmas Carol, and I spent probably another hour or two. And I read the book and finished it on Christmas morning for the first time read. And by the time I finished reading it, it was when all my Christmas plans kicked off. And, so I shall keep Christmas, all the days of my life, like as Christmas kicked off. It was kind of a beautiful moment. And I loved it. I loved this story and I loved the book. So big fan.
I like that. That's a good way to get into the spirit. How do you think this stacked up to the book?
It's almost difficult to put into words that because it's such a different retelling of it. It's like the
For
structure
sure.
of the story is there, but it's different and they add new things to it. If you were to ask me, like, do I prefer this retelling to the classic version of it? No. In all honesty, man, my favorite version of A Christmas Carol is the Muppets one.
It's a
So
good movie.
it's like I love A Muppets Christmas Carol so much.
I love A Muppet Treasure Island.
Yeah, great movies. But yeah, I kind of use like it stacks up really well, and I think it's a nice companion piece to the story.
Right on. All right. So, production notes. This was Bill Murray's first movie back in 4 years. He had taken some time off after Ghostbusters because he found the success and everything that went into that movie overwhelming for him. So, this being his first one back since then, they used his ties to Ghostbusters in the marketing. It was something like Bill Murray back amongst the ghosts. So I thought that was pretty cool how they played off his past movies and successes and used it in the marketing for this one.
Yeah, which I can't remember, but he was not happy about that, right?
He wasn't happy about a lot of things on set. He went through and rewrote a ton of the script, which led to now I got this from Wikipedia that hit most of his lines were improvised, but I saw from another source, Minty's Comedic Arts, that he only improvised his final speech, so I wasn't able to confirm that he improvised all of them. But that ending speech, you can definitely tell he did on the fly, and people thought he had actually blown a gasket.
You're talking about the speech that he gives about Christmas?
At the very end.
That is shocking as hell to me that that's improvised, because that seems like the part of the movie that would be written.
You
Because
can
that's.
tell there's parts where he'll stumble over his words a little bit. He won't really be looking at the camera all that well. So if you're looking for it, you can see it's in there that this was a one-shot improv.
Yeah, it's a great scene though. If
It
that's,
is.
one take, it's a powerful scene. But yeah, I did hear that him and the director Richard Donner, from Superman and The Goonies and plenty of other classic films that they really did not see eye to eye when they were making this movie.
Yes, and one of the things Bill Murray said about working with Richard Donner and just on this movie in general, or Richard Donner's in this movie in general, was that it was, quote, a misery.
Yep, I saw that. And then I think Richard Donner said something like, Bill Murray's great, but difficult to work with sometimes.
Yeah.
So question for you, are you a Bill Murray fan?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Every movie I've seen of his, I thought was hilarious.
Gotcha. Yeah, because I definitely grew up on Ghostbusters. One of my earliest intros to one of his movies was Space Jam.
Okay. I thought you were going to
And
say Zombieland.
no. But yeah, I like Bill Murray's movies a lot as well. I have a funny story for you real quick about the one time I met Bill Murray.
Oh, nice.
So I moved out here to South Carolina when I was 8, and Bill Murray co-owns the minor league baseball team here in Charleston, the Charleston River Dogs.
Okay.
So he's around Charleston like all the time. He lives here, and if you go to a baseball game, you'll probably see him there. And when we moved down here, we ran into him at a game, and there were two versions of this story that I heard because both my parents were there, and both parents say I met him, and I vaguely remember this, but not like super well. But I met him, said hello, and my dad said, "Oh, that's Dr. Bankman from Ghostbusters." And my mom said, "Oh, he's a big fan of your movies," talking about me. And Bill Murray is notorious for being, sarcastic and
Weird.
yeah and a bit of a smart ass. And so he apparently, when my mom said he's a big fan of your movies, Bill Murray said, "Oh yeah? What's your favorite movie of mine?" to me when I'm 8 years old. And I heard two versions of my answer. My dad says I said Ghostbusters because, you know, the Venkman, or is it Venkman or Bankman? I always forget. Venkman, right? With a V?
I haven't seen that movie since I was little.
Okay, I think it's Venkman, but I think I said Bankman the first time, but whatever.
That does make me think of the Are You Afraid of the Dark guy? It's Vink with a V, V, V.
So my dad says I said Ghostbusters. My mom says I said Space Jam. And which is funny because Bill Murray's only in that for like two scenes. But
I love the fact you weren't in it.
yeah, he's great in that though. I love his character in it. And not really two scenes. He's in it for a lot more, but you know what I mean. And Bill Murray, she says when I told him that, Bill Murray was like, got more relaxed and was like, oh, yeah, I like that one a lot too. So I walked away and they had bought me a baseball, my parents, from the stadium, and they had him sign it. And I came back and they said, look, he signed your baseball for you. And I got mad that he wrote on my baseball.
What's this guy doing?
And I did not want the baseball anymore.
So what'd you do with it? Did you toss it out?
Oh no, my parents kept it. And they bought me like another dollar one or something from the store. I was a little brat. And years later, my brother met him when we were both working at the stadium, and my brother told him that story. And Bill Murray goes, "Well, we should have kept that because I don't do that shit anymore."
I used to be a nice guy.
Yeah, that's my story of meeting Bill Murray, which I always tell, which is so embarrassing and ridiculous of me.
Nah, man, that's hilarious. I mean, you're just a kid. Why'd this guy ride on my baseball?
Yeah, I'm a Bill Murray fan for sure. But sorry, I stepped all over your production notes.
No, you're good. He also added to the script a little bit more romance between him and the female lead, whose name is escaping my mind. Is it Evelyn?
Are you talking about the act like the character's name or the actress?
The character's name.
I know the actress's name is Karen Allen and she plays Claire.
Claire, that's what it is. Anyway, he rewrote the script to make it more romance heavy between those two, and I like that. I thought that added a lot more to the story than it just being a dark comedy. There was also that romance element too, and you know how much I love that
I hope it was Bill Murray's idea to add the Kama Sutra.
shit.
Great. Yeah, that's interesting though. I did always hear that Bill Murray was kind of bummed out that he was always seen as like this really comedic, like slapstick actor. And he considered himself an actor that had like more range, which I agree with, because years later I saw a movie with him and Melissa McCarthy, Saint Vincent, which is like a drama movie where Melissa McCarthy is like a single mother. Her son is actually played by Jaden Martell, who plays Stuttering Bill in It 2017. Bill Murray is like the angry old neighbor, but ends up kind of bonding with the son a little bit and helping Melissa McCarthy out. It's actually a really great drama film. So.
I feel like a lot of those comedians go through that. We saw it with Adam Sandler when he did Funny People and later Uncut Gems. We saw it with Jim Carrey, how he was able to evolve out of just this goofy comedy guy. And I mean, I get that. Who wants to be typecast into one thing when you set out to be an actor? You know, you take your shit so serious that you make it big and oh, now I'm just a goof. Like, I can see how that would weigh on someone.
Yeah.
All right, last one.
All right.
This is going to tie back into that late 80s horror comedy. So, this was nominated for an Academy Award for Best Makeup and Hair, but it was beat out by another movie that came out the same year, Beetlejuice.
Oh, interesting. Okay.
Talk about two icons of the late 80s, Michael Keaton and Bill Murray. And these came out the same year.
Yeah, I did not put that together. That's interesting. Again, both horror adjacent movies too.
And that's all of the production notes I have.
Right. Yeah, Beetlejuice is another one that would be a good double feature with this because it's got almost like a Halloween vibe to it, but it's not like firmly horror, though, you know?
Yeah, there's enough in there where, a lot of times, especially in the West, when we think of horror, there's a butcher chasing somebody and hacking them up. These ones are more horror imagery, I guess you could say,
Yeah, which is
or
always a cool,
tone.
which is always a cool experiment when you can make a story that just has horror elements in it as opposed to we are a horror story.
Much like I did with my latest novella, When We Once Loved, on Amazon now.
Hell yeah, pick it up right now on Christmas. Absolutely.
Does anybody hate me as much as I hate myself right now?
No. All right. Well, let's dive into the plot of Scrooged. I am completely caught off guard when the movie starts and we're watching what we don't realize is a commercial, but it's like an action commercial of this like action star saving elves from some baddies that have taken over Santa's workshop.
The $60 million dollar man.
Lee Majors.
That movie looks fucking awesome.
That's a movie I want to see made. But yeah, it's like opens with a commercial with a bunch of elves, and then there's like a fucking shootout, and Santa's like, Lee Majors, you've been a really good boy this year.
And I love the other two commercials that play. It ends with this cheesy sitcom that's called Father Loves Beaver. Wait, where's Dad? He's out chasing beaver. Oh, Dad.
Yeah, the commercials are some of the best part in this. And then we cut to Bill Murray playing Frank, and he is such an asshole.
Yeah, just like an over-the-top evil villain.
Like, he is such a dick. And one of his first lines where I realized that is he said, I think he's asked them to show them the Scrooge version of the trailer. For because the whole thing is they're working on a trailer to play a Christmas carol, basically, or I think they call it Scrooge.
Yeah.
And they're making a commercial for the TV network for getting people to watch Scrooge. And they play this really heartfelt commercial, and then there's like a pause, and Bill Murray just goes, "Wow, does that suck?"
Yeah, because there's that old British guy reading a Christmas carol by the fireplace. He's like, let's spice it up, and then plays his commercial.
Oh, it's so ridiculous. Then he shows his cut of the trailer, which I'm sure you loved, which was like fucking acid rain, drug dealers.
International terrorism and murder on the highways. You
Watch.
have to watch this Christmas special.
Your life may depend on it.
Yeah.
Oh, it's so ridiculous. And then we meet Elliot, played by Bobcat Goldthwait.
He voice acted a dog on Cartoon Network in the mid-90s that was like a host of a cartoon show. Because I remember seeing this and thinking, oh, that's that dog, but I can't remember that thing's name.
I don't know. My mind just keeps going to Courage the Cowardly Dog.
Was he in that? Or no, that was a cartoon in the 90s. Maybe I was just high as a child.
Yeah, no, so he is Frank is a total douche. He also is super mean to his assistant or secretary. What's her name? Grace.
Oh, we'll go with that. They don't say her name too often. I just knew her as his assistant.
Hold on. Grace, yes. And she's got like a picture that's one of her kids drew on the wall.
Yeah, because he's trying to look through the hole to see his to see was it Elliot get fired?
Something like that. He's like, how many fingers does this character have?
Critiquing
11?
a 7-year-old's drawing.
Yeah, 11? That's right. It's crap. Get it off the wall. So ridiculous. And then, yeah, so he fires Elliot, Bobcat Goldthwait, because he's questioning the scariness of the commercial, which is the one, which was the acid rain one. That's the one that he wants to air. And he fires Elliot, and it is just shitty one-liner after shitty one-liner, where like Grace is like, "You can't fire him. It's Christmas," and he goes, "That's a good point. Stop his bonus, would you?" So fucked. And then there's like a
He
whole, oh
really
yeah,
is a dickhead.
he's awful, dude. And then, but he makes a joke with Elliot before he fires him, where he's like, "Yeah, you're right. I'll let you know in 5 minutes if we can change it. We don't
Oh
want to
yeah.
scare the dickens out of people." Yeah, you know the jokes you make where people don't laugh and you have to explain yourself?
Yes.
Yeah, that's Bill Murray in this scene.
Those are always the funniest jokes.
It's like, scare the dickens out of people. No one gets it. Then there's like a whole scene with his boss where they're talking about appealing to cats and dogs with new television stuff.
And it's so stupid because his boss says that they have a new study that cats and dogs are beginning to watch TV. So now they want to slowly gear the programming toward household pets. And having worked in TV and dealing with ratings, it's just so true. It could be the dumbest shit, but the guys running the station would say, "Hey, it's working for 2-year-olds, so now we have to get them to watch local news." It's like, oh my God. But it is true, not just in TV with ratings. We see it in entertainment and movies constantly, where, hey, this superhero thing's working, so let's make 30 of them until we absolutely beat it into the ground and nobody cares anymore.
Yeah, you're looking at no one specifically with that.
Not targeting anyone at all.
I was like, wait a minute, I know where this is going.
I mean, that's just the latest example because, I mean, the stereotype of Hollywood from people who critique it is it's all either superhero movies or remakes. There's not a whole lot of originality to it anymore. And why are they those two things? Because those are the two things that sell the most. I get it.
Not inaccurate with this scene though, because I've seen my animals watch TV.
Well, here's a weird thing. Roku actually began programming for household pets. You can
Yeah.
put on. Have you seen that? You can put on
I
a
have
screen
seen
like a
that.
dog
Yeah.
dish. They
It's
were
awesome.
ahead of their time in predicting that shit.
It's awesome. I love it. I've seen my dog and my cats watch TV before. It's hilarious.
It'd probably captivate me too, let's be honest.
But yeah, the first bit of this movie is just how much of an asshole is Frank. He goes out to get a cab and this poor lady
She's like 90.
and he's like, "Hey lady, you dropped something," and then takes a cab. And she's like, "Please, sir." And he just like, "Hey, step on it, would you?" He's such a dick.
You know what else I was feeling about this movie too, at least in the beginning stages? I was getting a bit of an American Psycho vibe to it. The well-off guy in the 80s just being a douche.
Yeah, that's true. There's some Wall Street type vibes here with the way he acts. Is there like a delay when I'm talking?
You've been breaking up a decent amount. It's not really a delay, though.
All right, hold on. Let me switch to my hotspot.
Gotcha. Have I been all right?
Yeah, you sound fine. It looks like you can't hear me at certain points.
Yeah, the breaking up probably is causing like a second delay.
Okay. It's all right. You sound fine on my end. All right.
Cool. You sound better on my end already.
Okay, cool. I connected to my hotspot. Yeah, no, I was saying there's like some Wall Street vibes with the way he acts.
Yeah, definitely. He has that office high up in the sky with the New York City skyline behind him, and he's just being such a tool to everyone because he thinks he's better than all of them. Or maybe he's just a legit mean person. But we come to see that's not really the case. Deep down, he is a good old softy.
Well, let's get to the scene we've referenced a bunch, when his undead former boss and best friend Lou shows up.
Seeing this as an adult, what did you think of Lou? Did you think he was scary? Did you think he was funny? How did it go for you?
He started off really funny, and then towards the end, there's a moment where I was like, "Oh, this is still fucking scary." Because he shows up and he's, like a zombie. There's the knocking first, which Bill Murray has like a shootout with nobody. And that's when Lou shows up, and he shows up and he's just like, "Hey, Frank, it's your old boss, And then he's scared of him, and then he's making funny jokes like, Frank is like shooting him in the back, being like, "Bang, bang, 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 bang." And then Lou's like, I don't mind you hitting me in the back, but you might want to lay off the whatever liquor he's got.
The
The Bacardi, yes.
Bacardi. I think it's cool that when he shoots him, just all this dust comes out and then a golf ball falls out the back of his head.
Yeah, a rat's climbing around in his head and the golf ball falls out the hole in the back of his head. When he drinks alcohol, the alcohol sprays out of his side.
I don't know, man. Beetlejuice has some good effects, but I'd put this right up there with it when it came to that Academy Award.
Absolutely, dude. This I love this makeup. It is so good. But yeah, he's real funny when he starts. It's the moment when he hangs Frank out the window and he's like, Merry Christmas, Frank. Like, oh.
That's the part I always remember scaring me when I was little, is he was freaky up until that point, and then when he shoves him through the glass and he's hanging him over the streets, I'm just like, oh shit, now
Well,
I'm scared.
they give you a full-on like face-to-face view of his eyes, which are hollowed out,
Yeah, right.
and you're like, oh shit. But they have some great dialogue. My favorite is Lou's like to Frank. Lou is talking to Frank and he goes, you can change. You don't have to end up like me. He's like, look at me. I used to have the top office. I was adored by women. And Frank just says, Lou, you paid for the women.
Right.
But yeah, no, then he makes that flip and Lou says, you're gonna be visited by three ghosts. I forgot it doesn't happen all in one night, though. It happens the next day.
Yeah, I believe this is the 23rd leading into 24th Christmas Eve. It's
Okay.
the same in A Christmas Carol, too. He's visited by Marley the day before Christmas Eve, I
Is
believe.
it? Okay, I thought it was like the same night.
I always thought that too. Maybe it's a Mandela effect, but yeah, I remember I read the Christmas Carol a year or two ago, and that was
Hold
the
on.
deal because I was confused too. I thought
No.
that it all happened in the same night.
Yeah, no, I'm as you're saying that, I feel like Marley says, you will be visited by three ghosts. The first one will appear tomorrow at midnight or something.
Yeah, because I was like, wait, doesn't this all happen at once?
Yeah, I'm looking at it right now. Hold on. Marley's ghost tells him da, da,
Heebie-deebie-doo,
da,
skibbity-bap, hoobie-doo,
da. Okay,
hee-hee.
Wikipedia doesn't say, but that's
God
okay.
damn it. Well, we'll have to reread the book and get back to everyone.
I would love to reread the book. I wanted to make it a tradition to reread it every Christmas. I just didn't get the chance yet, but
Not a long read. I
no,
like that
it's
about
like 130 pages, something like that.
it. Yeah, if that even.
But yeah, so Lou drops Frank, his hand breaks off too,
Oh, that's right.
which is also creepy, is Frank's holding on to Lou's hand and his hand just like decays and falls off.
What just a good ghost scene. I don't feel like we see that many ghosts done the way he was. Like you said, he's kind of zombified. He's this dusty. He basically just looks like an old corpse. There's not really anything. I don't know. You think a ghost, you think of a guy in a tablecloth that you can see through. This is not that at all. This is like an undead being in front of you.
Yeah. And so then the next day he kind of just goes back to doing what he's doing and he's, working on the commercial, but he's a little rattled, of course. But he gets word that his scary Scrooge promo scared an elderly person to death.
Yeah.
And his only reaction is, you just can't buy publicity like that.
And then he gets on the phone and he gives him that sweet talk spiel. Oh, IBC is so saddened to hear of the news.
Yes. Then there's like a whole talk on the set of some woman that's going to act in the commercial, and they're going back and forth about her nipples being visible.
Yeah, she's part of the Santa dancers or something. It's
Yeah.
basically a half-naked woman dance squad, and you really can't see her nipples. The censor lady wasn't lying, but I like this scene because it starts off this whole slapstick of this censor lady continuously getting maimed on
Yes,
this TV
I forgot
set.
about this. She always has something happening to her, and it's so awful, but it's so funny. It is straight slapstick. But yes, the censor lady is like, you can't put this outfit on television. For one thing, you can see her nipples. And he goes, and they're great nipples or something like that. She's like, it's a family television program. It's Charles Dickens. And he's like, well, Charles Dickens would have wanted to see her nipples then.
Yeah, he does say that.
And then later on, he flips it though, and he says, hey, make sure her nipples are covered when she gets like knocked out, when the censor lady gets knocked out. Oh, man. I don't remember what this is referencing, but I said, my lord, thank goodness he has this change. He is so fucking mean. I don't remember what that's referencing. He does something on Saturday. Oh, it's when Grace's son comes to the set to see the commercial.
Is that when he's like, who is that kid? Get him.
Yeah, and he's like threatening to have him thrown off set and arrested downtown.
Or it was around the time that happened. Did you notice Chris Farley in here?
No.
He's one of the production guys with he's holding a ladder or something. And he's just talking with this horrible New York accent, but you can definitely tell it's Chris Farley.
Nice. So, my favorite bit part on set is when he's trying to talk to Claire when they reunite because he called his old love interest Claire. And the whole time he's trying to talk to her, the dudes on set are just hammering away.
Can we please quit the goddamn hammering?
It's just such a stupid joke, but it just keeps going. And I forgot that it had a payoff too, where like they go, okay, and then the whole fucking set falls apart because they stop
Oh,
hammering. And the censor lady has the whole set fall on her. Oh, jeez. But yeah, no, so he reunites with Claire, and then he goes to a restaurant with his boss, and that's where he meets his supposed replacement, Bryce.
goddamn Bryce. It's funny, one of my best friends' name's Bryce.
Oh, really?
Yeah, he doesn't act like this guy.
Yeah, no, this guy is very nice on the surface, but he really wants to replace Frank as the television executive.
Oh yeah, he's your typical 1980s New York sleazeball.
I also have a note that says, yep, definitely horror with the eyeball and the shot glass.
The eyeball in the shot glass, and then he sees that waiter catching on fire.
Yes, and he throws like liquid on him and he says, oh, sorry, I mistook you for some celebrity.
Richard Pryor.
Yeah. Oh, geez. Also, this is where I realized that Bill Murray's like high-pitched screams that he does throughout the whole movie are hysterical.
Oh, yeah.
Like, he goes up like a whole octave and just shrieks every time something happens. So I gotta ask you. And we'll walk through them, but who is your favorite ghost?
Mine has always been the Ghost of Christmas Future.
Okay.
I want to guess yours. Is it Christmas present?
Yes.
Ah.
So before we dive through their plot lines, I love the reimagining of these three ghosts.
I know.
I think this is the best part of the movie, is the recreation and reimagining of the ghosts.
Especially if it's your first watch through and you're not really sure who they're going to be. I imagine that it has to be such a surprise to see them or to have that suspense build up, trying to figure out who the next one is going to be.
Yep. So the ghost of Christmas Past is a cab driver.
And just a really grody New York cab driver. He's always smoking a cigar. His teeth are yellow. He has this scraggly hair. He's talking so loud. Again, when I was little, this guy freaked me out. I don't know if I thought he reminded me like a kidnapper or something, but oh, it just always got to me.
Great makeup on him, though, too. He's got like shades under his eyes and
Yeah.
looks like he's been dead a while himself. He's great.
That's true too. And it's real subtle though.
Yeah.
That's what I like about it. It's same with the Ghost of Christmas Present. Not trying to jump the gun, but
No, go for it.
she's really pale with the dark shadows under the eyes. She looks like a fairy, but really she could be an undead fairy. I guess she is a
Yep.
ghost.
And then we got the ghost of Christmas Future, who is literally
So cool.
just a grim reaper, but he's got a television for a face.
And he has the trapped souls in his rib cage.
I got some major Freddy Krueger vibes off of that.
Oh yeah, that's right. Because when he lifts his shirt up, he has those faces like meow, meow,
Yeah,
meow.
and I think that's Dream Master that he does that.
Okay.
It's
One
either
of
Dream Warriors or Dream Master that he does that. I can't remember now.
might be Dream Warrior because I remember it and I think I've
Yeah,
seen
he
that one the
rips
most.
his sweater open and the faces are protruding out.
One of my favorite lines that we used to always quote when we lived in Jersey with the Ghost of Christmas Past was, "Go back to Jersey, you moron."
I was thinking about you when I heard that line. So we get the cab driver for the Ghost of Christmas Past, and he takes Frank to his childhood home, and his upbringing was terrible and didn't really do a lot for Christmas with his family. And his dad even brought him 5 pounds of like fresh veal or something for
That
a present.
goes for 40 or 50 bucks these days.
He's like, but Daddy, I wanted a choo-choo train. Well, then go get a job and get a choo-choo train.
One thing with the Ghost of Christmas Past, too, that I really liked is how his cab was one of the old school yellow cabs. Did you notice that?
I did notice that. I also got some Back to the Future vibes off of them when they transport. That's my favorite part, is that they transport from time to time in a cab.
And the mile markers of the year.
Yep. And holy shit, when we go to that flashback at the office party where he first meets Claire, Bill Murray's fucking like mullet.
Oh my God, it's out of this world.
That was wild.
I was thinking too, back when I used to work in television. The one station I worked at, they're like, man, after every newscast, we had a poll and we'd have drinks and smoke cigars. And they're like, yeah, you can't do that anymore. But back in the day, it used to be a lot of fun to work here. It's just like, man, jobs used to seem so much more chill.
I know. But yeah, no, we get to the party scene, and there's another like blonde woman that's hitting on Bill Murray.
Making copies of her ass and handing them out.
Forgot about that. Could you imagine being the person that does that at a party?
I may have been once or twice. There was one time my last memory before I blacked out was air guitaring to Metallica on a pool table, so I would definitely be that person doing
Eight pole in, or eight ball in a quarter pocket.
that. Shout out Silent Night, Deadly Night.
Oh yes. But he also has a great screaming moment here where he walks away from the girl hitting on him in the past, and the present one is like, I must have been out of my mind.
That's right.
But he has a sweet meeting with Claire. And then Yeah, I just and then they go to that weird like talk show thing with the dog.
That's something straight out of the 70s.
I was like, what?
We're gonna have a talk show with a dog.
Yeah.
That's something that could have only flown in 73.
What is it? A bone. It's a bone, you lucky dog.
Here's the part I liked where he has the option to go to dinner with the president or keep his dinner plans with Claire and her friends. And that really got me wondering, what would you do in that situation? That's a pretty big decision to make.
It's Christmas. I'm not going to dinner with the boss.
Really?
Not happening.
Man, I would definitely go with the boss.
Nope.
Well, here's the thing. I would go if it was something pertaining to my writing. Like if somebody was telling me, hey, I want to talk to this book deal, you should come out to dinner.
I
Or.
listen, I would be like, it is fucking Christmas. I've got plans, and it's for with my loved ones. You can wait a day.
Well, apparently I'm a non-caring prick. News to everyone, I know. Nah, that part just resonated with me because in my writing I've had to make choices like that. Like when I went out to New York to host that Q&A at a film festival, my buddy had his lifting contest that same day. And I felt like a piece of shit because I told him I was going to go to that and then I was like, "Man, if it was anything else in the world, I would tell them to go fuck themselves, but this is like a once in a lifetime opportunity. I got to go to this." So it just made me think about decisions like that and some other stuff. This movie
Sure.
made me think a lot, actually,
It's a
which is
moving
odd.
movie, man.
It is. There's a lot to this, which I had not really remembered.
Oh, that's the point of the talk show scene. Yes, is this is where he gets invited out. Yeah.
Yeah, because he did.
I couldn't remember what happens here, but yeah, his boss invites him out to dinner, and Claire's like, "No, we have plans with our friends. They're our best friends." And this is where it sets it up that he's become obsessed with work by this point.
I wouldn't do it for a job, but for writing, I definitely would.
And then is this where the Ghost of Christmas Past leaves pretty much? This is the last scene with him.
Yeah, because he appears on the monitor and he's like, "Hey, see you, Frank." And he looks around and everyone's gone.
And then we meet my favorite ghost, the one in the middle, the Ghost of Christmas Present. And why is she my favorite? Because she is so violent and constantly beating the shit out of Frank.
It's like everything that happens to the censor lady is now happening to him.
She is like slapping him and headbutting him. She throws him down the stairs at one point.
She actually pulled on his lip so hard that she ripped it, and they couldn't film for 3 or 4 days because he had to get it repaired, like stitches and
I
stuff.
did hear about that, yeah. But it never gets old, dude. This whole sequence is just insane.
Yeah, and I like the way they have her move around too. Probably on wires or something, but how she just floats around.
Yeah. And then they have some funny banter too, where they go to Grace's house, and that's how he sees that she's a struggling mom and he should be paying her more. And the ghost repeats something that Grace already said, and Bill Murray's like, "I may be invisible, but I'm not deaf." Then it gets a little weird. 'Cause we see Grace, bonding with her kids and doing that like blowing raspberries on someone's stomach.
Oh yeah,
And then she and then the
I always
ghost
remembered this part as a kid too, when she did this to him.
and then the ghost starts doing it to Frank, and he's like, "Ha ha ha, stop it. More, more, more." I was like, "What is happening right now?"
It's such a weird, fantastical scene. I'm just like, well, what?
And is this where he goes to visit Claire at the homeless shelter that she works at?
I believe he does that between the Ghost of Christmas Past leaving and him meeting the Ghost of Christmas Present. So it's
Well,
close to here.
because it's in the present that he finds Herman frozen, right?
Yeah, that's after the Ghost of Christmas Past leaves, or present leaves,
Present,
because
yeah.
she dumps him down into that sewer, and that's where he finds Herman, who
Yeah, so
is
it's
horrifically frozen. What a
oh,
scene.
we're gonna talk about that because I imagine that did a number on you when you were a kid.
Dude, just about every scene in this movie did. I was a pussy.
It's fucking traumatizing, dude. But yeah, no, so he goes to visit Claire at the homeless shelter, and he's still trying to reconnect with her, but she's a good person and working, on Christmas to give people shelter and food and stuff. And he says the shittiest advice I've ever heard. Where he says, if you wanna, save someone, save yourself. Scrape them off, Claire.
I mean, you gotta look out for number one.
Oh God, he's such a douche. It's so funny though, but it's so douchey.
Really is. It's so over the top. A lot of people back when this came out, critics were saying it's too mean-spirited or whatever, but I just think it fits the comedy so well, and Bill Murray pulls it off expertly, where he's just such an asshole, you can't help but laugh at how ridiculous it is.
And then he goes to see his brother James and his family, and he sees that his brother is always missing him on Christmas because Frank never attends. There was also a bit where Grace was trying to get Frank to decide what he wants to send all of his people for Christmas, and he's like, a towel, a VHS, a towel, towel, all towels.
I know it's from A Christmas Carol, but I thought they pulled it off very well in this movie. How Frank goes around and sees these people who might not have the huge salary or the skyscraper office. You know, they might not have as much financially as he does, but these people still have each other. And they're still having an amazing time at Christmas, and they don't really need millions of dollars to do that.
Yep. No, it's a beautiful thing. And that's part of the beauty of the story. I do laugh though when James gets his present from Frank, and Frank says, "That doesn't look like a towel."
Yeah. It's the latest VHS player.
And then he gets knocked out with a toaster by the ghost of Christmas present. And we get the great line, The bitch hit me with a toaster.
It's funny this is tagged, speaking of the VHS player, it's funny it's tagged as a modern retelling, which it is, but now a modern retelling is what, almost 50 years old? 45 years old? 88 to 2004?
About 40-45 years.
Coming up on 40, yeah. Yeah, because I'm, what am I saying? I was born the next year. Yeah, about, th so right now it's about, what, 36 years old. So, I mean, it's not really that modern at all anymore, which is wild to think.
No, but I did see that it's often put on the list of greatest Christmas movies ever because people still find it relevant with the commercialization of Christmas
Yeah.
and things like that. So, and that's accurate. And then we get the frozen corpse of Herman, the homeless man that Frank didn't pay $2 for so he could stay in a shelter. And this corpse is freaky.
Yeah, the expression on his face, the stopwatch he's holding, he's painted this pale color that's, it's not funny blue looking. It's almost like Jack Nicholson in The Shining when he
I
freezes
got
to
that
death,
vibe,
only without the goofy face.
yeah. This is a creepy scene, though. I could see this being terrifying as a kid.
Yeah, this movie, the one X-Files episode where the dude would invite delivery guys over and eat them, these were some things that I was legitimately scared stiff. I couldn't move. Then my
So,
dad would smack me and say, "Get up, it's just a goddamn movie."
yes, but then that's the Ghost of Christmas Present is pretty quick. And then we go back to the office building and Frank is terrified and he retreats to his office and we get a fake out with what we think is going to be the Ghost of Christmas Future in the elevator, but it's just someone dressed as a Grim Reaper and the
Yeah.
Bryce is there doing his job and he's like, "Why are you scaring Frank?"
It's just the Ghost of Christmas Future, which it is
And
for Scrooged, or Scrooge.
well, then the Ghost of Christmas Future looks like that initially when it shows up.
And how its hand comes out of the TV. How wild was that?
Yeah, that was awesome where Frank is like not looking at the TV and it's the person in the Ghost of Christmas Future costume, but then it just slowly gets bigger and comes out of the screens.
I think that's another great horror scene. If you just
Yeah.
saw that in a vacuum, you'd be like, "Whoa, what movie is this? This is great."
Yeah, it was awesome. And then yeah, the Ghost of Christmas Future is, showing that Grace's kid who hasn't spoken a word since he watched his father die. He ends up being institutionalized, and then Claire is becoming very vain herself, and she's like repeating his advice where he said, "A
Yeah.
good friend once told me, scrape him off," and she's like, not a good person anymore.
Yeah, because of all these Victorian-looking beggar kids show up at her fancy lunch. Did you
I
notice that? They look like London sea urchins from 1840.
did see that, yeah. I love how over
Wait.
the top it is.
I know. Well, I mean, that's part of the appeal of this movie is everything about it is over the top.
Yeah, it's like a dramatization, extra dramatization of the story. It's pretty awesome, actually.
It's almost like somebody in the 1980s did a fuck ton of coke and said, "Let's redo Christmas Carol."
Wouldn't be surprised.
I just wish that guy was me.
Yeah, but it's probably the darkest, because usually Christmas Carol ends with like Scrooge just seeing his gravesite where he's dying, where he's died.
He gets full on cremated.
But in this one, it's like his funeral and his body's about to be cremated, but he ends up in the coffin and he catches on fire. Like it's probably the darkest visualization of the Ghost of Christmas Future's prediction.
Yeah, because he sees his brother and his sister-in-law standing there and he thinks it's his brother's funeral. And I love the transition to him trying like so desperately to keep the casket out of the flames. And then the next shot, he's the one inside the casket and his feet are kicking and the flames are touching at his toes. Oh my God, like I got tense just watching that.
We should also point out that before the Ghost of Christmas Future vision happened, Elliot Bobcat Goldthwait showed back up to
Oh,
try to kill him with a
yes.
shotgun while he's
And
singing
then,
like some jolly Christmas song and running around with it like a double barrel shotgun.
right. And then he ran into the elevator and met the Ghost of Christmas Future. One other thing I like about this ghost is how just towering it is over Frank. This thing is massive. And we never, aside from its face being different TV screens, we never really get a good look at it full on. There's always close-ups or far away shots where it's not really in focus. It's just this black cloaked figure. And I loved how they did that with this, because if it was some cheesy ass skeleton mask in there, it'd be like, all right. But the way they did it, I thought was so much better.
Which is a nice fake out, because I remember watching Scrooge or Scrooged for the first time, and as you know, getting into the story, like 99.9% of the time, the Ghosts of Christmas Future is my favorite because it's, you know, the horror one and the scariest one. And I remember when I saw what the past ghost and the present ghost look like for Scrooged when I first watched this, I was so on edge, like, oh, what is the Ghost of Christmas Future gonna look like? And then they show that kind of cartoonish skull mask on the TV or and in the elevator. I was like, oh, really? And then it
Gotcha.
goes away and it's the television screen. I'm like, oh, hell yeah. And then it opens up its cloak and I'm like, yep, there it is. Frank has a change of ways. And he gets back in the elevator or comes back too in the elevator with Elliot. And then he like beats the shit out of Elliot, like keeps giving him kisses and then throws him against the wall and grabs him with the shotgun. And he goes like, hey, are you just happy to see me or is that a shotgun?
Yeah. The humor with the violence is so funny to me.
I think I said that backwards. It's, are you happy to see me? Wait.
Is that a shotgun in your hand, or are you just happy to see me?
Yes, there you go. Thank you. Yeah, no, but he just like is throwing him around and slapping him and like then he blows raspberries on Elliot's stomach.
Like this guy wasn't trying to murder me 2 minutes ago.
And but like I love that Elliot flips and he's like, please don't hurt me.
Right, now he's thinking Scrooge lost his mind and he's chill.
Did you notice earlier on where the Ghost of Christmas Present took his bottle of liquor?
What'd she do with it?
No, sorry, not Ghost of Christmas Present, Ghost of Christmas Past.
Oh, is he
Where
drinking it while he's driving
Elliot
the
was
cab?
trying to get drunk on the sidewalk because his wife left him because he lost his job. And
Yeah.
the cab drives past him and he takes his liquor from him.
Oh, I remember seeing the part where he's drinking the liquor, and then Bill Murray's cab drives by him and splashes him, and the liquor falls out of the bag.
Yeah. Something like that. I just remembered him having something happen when he was trying to drink on the sidewalk.
God damn it, I'm just trying to drown my sorrows over here.
And then yeah, so Frank comes down and you know, this is where he gives that beautiful speech. Which again, I'm shocked is improv that this speech is improv.
Again, that's just what the internet tells me, but it added up to me when I was watching it with that in mind. I was thinking like, yeah, I can definitely tell now that I'm looking for it.
Well, Bill Murray gave this speech like 110%. He's got like tears in his eyes.
It seems really authentic.
Yeah, it's great and it's a beautiful moment. And then it ends with Grace's son finally speaking and saying, God bless us, everyone, like the original story, which is the parallel I wanted to point out. I love that Scrooge, like the story is playing in the commercial in parallel with Frank going through the story.
It is really cool, especially once the production begins. Because, like you said, we see the Ghost of Christmas Future on the TV screens because he's in the TV special. And then we see him in real life, and then it really starts playing off each other from there on out. But yeah, I mean the whole time they're building up to it and the ghosts are coming, so it is cool to see how that's developing as this story in itself is.
Yeah, and they're playing the classic tale alongside the modernization of it in the 80s, which I think is really cool. And that's Scrooge, man. They sing a happy song for Christmas, and yeah, I love this movie, man.
Including all the ghosts, they join in on the singing too. I thought that
Yeah.
was a funny part. That was a nice touch.
Yeah, this movie's great, dude. I love it. And again, very, very horror influenced. And somebody asked in the Facebook group the other day, my buddy Charlie put a question in the Facebook group about would you consider A Christmas Carol the story a horror story? And I say yes.
You know, it's funny. I was talking to Brandon Alvis, the paranormal investigator, with Haunted Discoveries. And we were talking about, my short answer is yes, but we brought up how supernatural and paranormal and ghosts are represented in entertainment compared to the real thing. And he brought up the point that a lot of times what you see is these supernatural ghosts are evil in a lot of modern horror. And we would bring up A Christmas Carol and how these ghosts were more like guides to Scrooge. They weren't haunting him or terrorizing him. They were more so showing him what has happened, what can happen, guiding him through his life. And I like that take so much better than just, oh, there's a ghost in my closet and he's evil.
Yeah. Sorry, I might have just burped while you were talking about that.
God damn it, I was trying to make a point.
I don't know if the microphone picked that up, but I heard it,
And
so.
I don't know if I made a point.
I
Might have just been more mindless babble.
don't know. But no, we're
That's why I write. I can just keep going and spilling my shit.
sounds like we're both in agreement, so that A Christmas Carol is a horror story for sure.
Yeah, I mean, what else really would you call it? Like the original Christmas Carol, that there's ghosts, there's supernatural activity with the time dilation and everything.
You know what other version of A Christmas Carol I just remembered? Did you ever
The
watch that
one
movie? What?
with is it Jean-Luc Picard? Who plays him?
Oh, there is one with Patrick Stewart in
It's
it.
Patrick Stewart, yeah.
Yeah. No. Did you ever watch that movie from the 80s, All Dogs Go to Heaven?
Yeah.
Okay, did you ever watch the Christmas one that they did of that?
I don't think I have.
There was a Christmas version of All Dogs Go to Heaven where Carface. Sorry, I just realized how stupid that I've never picked up on that joke
Say, touch some scar. I'm Carfish.
until I said that. But yeah, the bad dog, like the bulldog, is the Scrooge in that one.
What ends up happening to him? Does he reform his ways?
He does.
Nice.
Yeah, same thing. But
I mean, I guess that is how the story goes. What am I talking about? No, he
Yeah.
didn't. He went to hell.
Yeah, exactly. But yeah, man, that's Scrooge. You got anything else?
No, just that there's a lot to dive into with this one. You know, we mentioned the social commentary, the dynamic we see, especially between Bill Murray being this television president and how he interacts with people he feels are beneath him or don't have enough money as he does, versus how he treats people above him or people on his level. And I think there's a lot you can take away from that. I won't get on my economic soapbox. And two, just like any telling of A Christmas Carol, it always makes me think about my life and the decisions I've made that led me to where I am, things that if I had done this different at this point in my life, where I might be now. So all of that wrapped in a dark comedy with Bill Murray, I love it. It's an all-time classic for me, especially when it comes to Christmas movies.
Yeah, for sure. And I remember when I finished reading the book of A Christmas Carol, and there's that line, I shall love Christmas. What's the quote that Scrooge says? Hold on, I want to say it right. Because I posted this quote like on my Facebook when I finished reading the book. Hold on, I want to make sure I read this right, because it was a quote that really like resonated with me.
Do you need me to do some stalling music?
No, I got it. Okay, he says, Scrooge says, I will honor Christmas in my heart and try to keep it all the year. And that to me, like that quote resonated with me, especially in 2020, when the world was in a crazy place that, yes, that ties to Christmas, but it just kind of reminded me, like, just keep goodness, and peace and joy and like being a good person going around, like going year round, and that's a quote that just kind of like resonated with me a lot about like be a good person every day and appreciate what you have and appreciate your loved ones, your family, your friends, and all the blessings in your life. And that quote just resonates with me a lot, and I think they sort of recreate it well in the Bill Murray speech. But This story is just a powerful one, and I like it a lot. I think it's a horror story with a great meaning to it and a great lesson. So
Very well put.
there we go. All right. Do we want to do horror news with this one? I don't know. We kind of did this one on the whim, so I don't know if you wanted to do the regular format or not.
Well, luckily I did horror news on a whim.
Okay, cool.
All right, I have two news stories for you. Then I have a list that might be fun to go over.
Okay.
Ready for the first tidbit of horror news?
Bring it up.
We got David Harbour teases Violent Night 2. So he posted a picture on Instagram with him and Santa, but what is in his hand is the script for Violent Night 2. And if you're unfamiliar with Violent Night, that's the movie where a bunch of career criminals try to break into a rich person's Christmas Eve party and steal all their riches, but Santa shows up, saves the day, battles all these crooks.
And it is fucking fantastic.
And it sounds like we're getting a second one. What do you think of that?
I love it. Bring it on. I love that first Violent Night. I saw it twice in theaters and I fell in love with it as soon as Santa was drunk from a bar and then threw up on people that were standing on top of a rooftop. Yeah, so brutal. It lives up to its name. It has a more gruesome nail scene than Home Alone.
Oh, yeah.
And
I
I
actually
won't.
just watched Home Alone 1 and 2 back to back these past couple nights.
Some of my favorites.
They're really good.
Yeah.
I hadn't seen them since I was seriously like 3 or 4 or 5, so it was nice to revisit those.
Oh no. Every year, Home Alone seems to pop up. And I have a new Christmas tradition, whenever I'm wrapping presents. I always have Black Christmas 1974 on.
Oh, nice. I wrap mine in about 15 minutes between going to the gym and eating.
Yep, nope, that's my background movie when I'm wrapping presents, which is a cool tradition. So
That's nice. Maybe I need more traditions and I'll stop being such a Scrooge.
I
I'm not a Scrooge. I like Christmas. I just, anyway.
also loved Jingle All the Way with Arnold.
Turbo Man.
Put that cookie down now.
I have the special edition DVD of that with a slipcase and everything. I am
Love
proud to
it.
say. All right, up next we have Jack Black, Paul Rudd. They are in talks to lead the cast on the Anaconda remake. So nothing is in stone yet. There's just some early talks on it.
Wait,
But what
Jack
this
Black and
Paul Rudd
they're in talks to lead an Anaconda reboot?
remake.
Remake. Okay, interesting.
Yeah, I know we'd talked about Anaconda before. I just couldn't think of if we talked about this one specifically or we were just talking about the original. But anyway, this is going to be about a group of friends who actually set out to make a remake of Anaconda. So that's a pretty neat take on the whole idea of it. They're having a midlife crisis, want to remake their favorite horror movie from their youth. So they head into a rainforest only to find themselves in a fight for their lives against natural disasters, giant snakes, and violent criminals.
Okay.
So they're remaking the movie about people remaking the movie.
That's some Blair Witch 2 shit.
Well, listen to the star-studded cast from the original Anaconda, which this was done on a $45 million budget, so it's pretty impressive there.
J-Lo's in it, right?
J-Lo, Ice Cube, and then the next big one I know, Owen Wilson, who was huge back then.
Oh yeah.
So to see those names in a ridiculous horror movie like Anaconda, it's like how did that all come about exactly?
Dude, 90s horror was wild. I actually have never seen the original Anaconda.
Oh man, I watched it at my grandma's house a couple times.
I have seen the sequel, Anaconda, The Hunt for the Blood Orchid.
God, I don't think I have.
Or wait, is it called Anaconda? I think it's called Anacondas, The Hunt for the Blood Orchid.
No, they did the S thing.
Hold on, let me see real quick. Anaconda, let's see. Damn, I didn't realize Anaconda was 1997. I thought it was later than that. Yep, nope. Anacondas, The Hunt for the Blood Orchid.
Dear God. What year was that?
2004.
Wow, they waited a while.
But yeah, no, that's an interesting way to go for a remake, so But I love Jack Black, so I'll probably watch it. And I love Paul Rudd too.
Paul Rudd is a name I recognize, but I can never think of what he's in.
Ant-Man.
Oh, jeez.
Clueless, Halloween 6.
Who is he in Halloween 6?
He's the adult version of Tommy.
Oh, all right. Huh.
Yeah.
All right.
Paul Rudd's awesome, dude. You ever watch Jimmy Kimmel's Mean Tweets? The celebrities read Mean Tweets?
I seem to remember that idea from when I worked in news.
Okay, so Paul Rudd went on there, and it's like basically just a collection of clips on YouTube where celebrities read mean tweets about them. And Paul Rudd got on there, and one of the first ones he read was, "Paul Rudd is the most boring vanilla dude. You know, he just sits at home with his wife having a bland spaghetti dinner talking about his day."
That actually sounds really nice to me.
It's so funny. And
All right.
then I think the other one was like something about like hashtag Paul Rudd is unfuckable.
Is that true? Is he an ugly guy or something?
No, not at all.
Well, why is he unfuckable?
No, it's like
People just being dicks?
it's talking about like the tweet said something like, "Chances are if a girl will fuck Paul Rudd, she'll fuck you too. Hashtag Paul Rudd is unfuckable," or something.
Oh man,
So mean.
that is pretty ruthless.
All right, anyway.
All right, so I figure we could do something fun here. So, in case you're sick of all this holly jolly Christmas bullshit, here are some 10 not so jolly movies to watch. The 10 best horror movies streaming. This comes to us from Collider. 10 best streaming horror movies right now. So, I
And
thought we could go through
these are just movies in general that are streaming.
horror movies.
But they're not saying like movies to watch for Christmas. They're just 10 best movies streaming right now.
10 best horror movies if you're sick of the Christmas spirit. So
Okay.
ones that are just gonna take your all you're looking forward to this holiday and just smash it out of you.
All right. Shout out to Collider.com and the author.
Oh, let me get the author. It is Jeremy Crabb with two B's.
All right, shout out to Jeremy and Collider.com for the article.
All right, number one, Nosferatu from 1922, streaming on Prime Video.
Makes sense, given that the new one is coming out.
You gonna check that out before you see the new one?
No, probably not.
Oh, come on, man. It's like an hour long.
I know, I can't do the silent film thing, though.
Ah, that's right. Okay, number two, Psycho from 1961. I still haven't seen. That's on Netflix.
Sick. I would be down to give that a watch. Again, I only saw it for the first time 2 years ago, but I loved it.
Yeah, obviously, it's iconic for a reason. I just haven't ever watched it, and I have no excuse.
Yeah, it's great.
Number three is The Haunting from 1963 on Tubi. And now that I say it's on Tubi, I might check this out because if I am thinking correctly, this was the first iteration of The Haunting of Hill House.
You are correct, and I got very scared that you were going to say that it was the 1999 version, which I've seen, and that is a piece of shit. It is the 90s version is terrible, but it's got a great cast with
Okay.
Catherine Zeta-Jones, Lily Taylor, Owen Wilson, Liam
Owen Wilson popping up, man.
Neeson. Yeah, but the movie's terrible though. Don't watch it. It is notoriously bad. It's so awful with some of the worst CGI ever.
Would be interested to check out The Haunting just because how much I enjoyed Haunting of Hill House, so I
It's a
would like
very
to.
different story, though. Just bear in mind, Mike Flanagan kind of took the novel and like really adapted into his own thing.
Yeah.
But yeah, I want to see the 60s version. I've heard it's good.
Hey, it's on Tubi right now, so no money down. All the movies, where am I going with this? Number four, The Texas Chainsaw Massacre from 1974 on Prime Video.
Hell yeah. Classic.
Always a staple for any horror night.
Still super disturbing 50 years later.
I always say it, but still not one of my favorites, but I do enjoy the
No,
original.
it's not.
I do like the 2000s Texas Chainsaws a lot.
I do too. I've never seen New Beginning, but 2003 was really good. The reboot with Jessica Biel.
Yeah.
But yeah, Texas Chainsaw Massacre is not one of my top favorites or anything, but it's I still really like it. Also, yeah, happy 50 years to Texas Chainsaw Massacre this year.
Wow. All right. What a reaction.
Wow, that was your Owen Wilson.
Wow. Number five, Alien. That is on Hulu. The original Alien.
Nice. Hot take, I actually prefer Aliens to Alien.
Yeah, I've heard Aliens is more action sci-fi oriented, where with the space marines and everything. So I've been wanting to see that since I saw the original Alien this summer.
Yeah, it's still got some horror roots in it, but Alien is definitely more of a like a straight horror movie.
Yeah. I think too, I want to see more of that universe expanded on. So that would make sense to go see Aliens.
Yeah, it's a
So what am I waiting for?
great double feature with Alien too.
I'll put that on my list for 2025 because I really do want to see that.
Do it up. We'll have to do an episode on it.
Hell yeah. All right, number six, we have Scream, the original from 96. That is on HBO Max, or I guess now it's just called Max.
Cannot go wrong with that. It is also a classic. Again, didn't quite make my top 10, but it is fucking great. I love Scream. I love that whole franchise, honestly. There's not a bad movie in there.
Yeah, I'd put that on my level with Texas Chainsaw. Certainly don't dislike them, but it's never been my bread and butter when it comes to horror. It's not really my go-to, but I definitely respect them.
Yeah, that's what I like to watch around Halloween.
All right, number seven, we have The Sixth Sense, and that is on Max.
Yeah, it's a great movie. I really wish I had seen it not knowing the twist. But I had that spoiled for me long before I saw it. But I did finally watch it in 2017 and really liked it. It's still a great movie, and even if you know the twist, definitely one of Bruce Willis's best roles.
So I think I saw it around 2000 on one of the movie channels my dad had. And man, I caught the part where the kid sees the dead cyclist outside his window. And that just creeped me out so bad I couldn't watch it anymore after that. So,
Yeah, it's a scary fucking movie. The one with the kids like chasing Haley Joel Osment around like upstairs, and like I think a kid like peeks under the blanket or something. Terrifying.
that's one I'm like you. I didn't see it the whole way through until later in life. And I'd already
Yeah.
known. I feel like if you didn't see it in theaters, pretty quickly the ending was spoiled because that was everywhere.
Yeah, it's like Blair Witch, like where Blair Witch Project first came out, and you had to see it in the first few months before people found out it wasn't real.
Right. All right, this next one's really gonna stomp any kind of holiday spirit out of you. Train to Busan, 2016. Prime Video, we all know this one. Zombies on a train. Very emotional take on that genre.
Yeah, I'll watch that again when I want to cry my eyes out again. Fucking fantastic movie, but goddamn, that ending broke me.
It's just every death in that is a gut punch, and then the final ending is just ugh.
So bad. So great. Like, it's a fantastic movie. It's emotionally devastating.
I'd have to say that would definitely be in my top three zombie movies of all time.
Yeah, it's up there. I'd have to sit and think about my list, but yeah, it's up there for sure. It's a great movie.
All right, these next two, 9 and 10, I have not heard of, so I'm interested to hear if you have. Number 9 is Titan from 2021 on Hulu. You ever hear this one?
No.
All right, I'm going to read a
How is it
section.
how is it spelled?
Titan with an E.
Oh.
Titane.
Okay.
Yeah. Want me to read you the synopsis?
Yeah, give it a go.
All right, Jeremy says here, the body horror subgenre has had a really impressive run as of the last 5 years or so. And Julia Ducournau's
Ducournau
Titane,
or something.
we'll go with that. Titan is arguably one of the best that this subgenre has seen so far in the 2020s. This film is also distinct in its style and execution that one may find it quite hard to describe. But there's also part of that's also part of the fun with Titan. Not knowing what's around the next corner is a huge aspect of what makes this unsettling yet sensitive tale all the more riveting. So, I'm always down for some good body horror. I'd be willing to give that one a shot.
What does lit mean, like with a period when they're talking about a pronunciation? Because it says it's French, pronounced Titan, and then it's got LIT period titanium. Is that like the literary translation?
It's might be.
Yeah, because it says feature film debut as Alexia, a woman who, after being injured in a car crash as a child, has a titanium plate fitted into her head. In adulthood, Alexia becomes a murderous car model with an erotic fascination with automobiles,
Oh my God.
leading to a bizarre sexual encounter that sets off an increasingly outlandish series of events.
Wow.
Probably gonna stay away from that one, but that's interesting.
Have a lot of questions.
I don't want to know the answers.
All right, so last one on this list, I saw the TV Glow from 2024 on Max. You ever hear of this one?
No, not at all. I saw the TV glow.
I saw the TV Glow. Jeremy says it's a melancholic dive into the surreal and uncomfortable, asking the audience what it means to feel secure with your place in the world.
Sounds like a Goosebump title.
Yeah, I saw the TV Glow tells the story of Owen, an outsider who finds a kindred spirit in Maddie, who introduces him to her favorite late night TV teen show, The Pink Opaque. But after Maddie mysteriously disappears, Owen's reality begins to crumble as the line between the fictitious world of The Pink Opaque begins to blur with the real world.
Oh my God, Roy, you know who has a role in this movie?
Who's that?
Fred Durst.
Oh, wait, I think I've seen this. Is it when he says it's time to break stuff?
I don't know. I guess Justice Smith from Jurassic World, Fallen Kingdom, Detective Pikachu's in here, Phoebe Bridgers,
What?
the singer. Dude, this sounds awesome.
I am intrigued.
And it's PG-13 too. Oh, this is an A24 movie, dude.
Is it a movie or a series?
I think it's a series. Yeah, no, it's a movie.
Okay.
Oh, this was released really early on this year,
Yeah.
January.
Huh.
Dude, we gotta do an episode on this. This sounds awesome.
I'm down for it. I think we just found a future episode then.
The film marks the second entry in what I'm assuming that's the director. Yeah, it is. What the director refers to as their screen trilogy, following the film We're All Going to the World's Fair. I heard about that one too.
Really? I haven't heard of any of these. I also
Okay.
don't have Max, so that probably doesn't help my cause.
All right. Might have to give both of these a watch. These sound good.
I'm down to check them out.
All right, cool. And then it says, and preceding an upcoming novel titled Public Access Afterworld.
Oh, that sounds cool. It sounds like it might be analog horror.
Yeah. Dude, let's do it. I'm down. That sounds great.
Start getting our 2025 list together.
Yeah. And hopefully we will get some movie suggestions from people listening to the show to help fill up that schedule.
Hell yeah, that's one of the cool things about doing this is getting suggestions from people with movies I've never seen or maybe never planned to see or haven't even heard of. So that's definitely part of the fun of doing this.
There we go. Well, thanks for reading that list. Again, shout out to Collider and Jeremy. That was the name of the writer.
Jeremy Crabb, check him out on Collider.
Yes, shout out. Check out the article for sure. And yeah, sounds like we got a good list there.
It is a solid list.
Minus the Titan.
That movie sounds like it has a lot going on.
Yeah, no thanks. But that's it for this episode of the Midnight Terrors podcast. Again, just a little bonus episode for everybody. Thank y'all for all your support of the show, and hopefully you get a watch of Scrooged in. And we hope you have a very Merry Christmas and a great holiday. Roy, if people are here on Christmas Day right now and they want to pick up some R. Jacob Honeybrook writing, where can they do that?
Oh, you can do that on Amazon.com. Just type in my name in the search, R. Jacob Honeybrook, and you will find all of my books. They're all just 99 cents. So, a perfect Christmas gift for yourself. Because if you're hearing this, I hope you've already bought your Christmas presents for other people. You can also find me on Instagram at author underscore underscore. That might be more appropriate for me. You can also find me on Instagram at author underscore Honeybrook. There you can find all the ridiculousness I post. And links to my books on Amazon. It is the one-stop shop. That's where I do all my work. So check me out over on Instagram at author underscore Honeybrook. And one more quick thing. I have a column on TBM Horror called R. Jacob's Honeycuts. There I talk about some of the movies we discuss here, as well as do some that I watch in my free time, even do some interviews. So be sure to check out the Honeycut over on TBM Horror.
Beautiful, flawless, and
Except for the whore part.
it's all good. That's what editing's for. And
Make me
then,
sound good, please.
yeah, exactly. But then, if you want to get in touch with the Midnight Terrors podcast, you can find us on Facebook under Midnight Terrors Podcast. You can shoot us an email at midnightterrorspodcast@gmail.com. You can check out our link tree, Midnight Terrors Podcast, that has our T Public store attached to it. And you can join our Facebook group just called Midnight Terrors Podcast on Facebook. And you can come talk horror with us and all of our friends and family. It's a good time. And again, Merry Christmas from the MTP crew to all of you. We love y'all. And stay tuned. We have at least one more episode coming out before 2024 is over. And then we're going to start all over again in 2025. So we're going to keep on going, but we love y'all. Merry Christmas, happy holidays, happy new year, and this is the Midnight Terrors Podcast. Peace.